sounds good as rocker, doesn't it? I wrote it myself. Yeah. And that was my Christmas poem, right? Joe Strummer died at Christmas, and it's his anniversary every Christmas, and he's right here with mine, and I was asked one time to write a piece for his anniversary with the people with him. And this is called Tribute to Joe Strummer. Joe Strummer being in the cash, yeah? Okay. Your words were boots, Joe. Boots in Lewisham. When black and white and yellow riots put down the Nazi scum. And in Trafalgar Square in 91, when the fury of our rainbow class put Thatcher on the run, your words were firing like a gun, Joe, firing like a gun. I heard your booming words echo through the streets of Prague when we shut the World Bank down. And you were roaring vengeance in Genoa when we had to fight through gas and bullets just to hold our ground. And when the many-headed future met in Florence, everyone knew your name, Joe. Your songs were all around. Your songs were all around. And when they stood me up in court, Joe, I hummed the Brixton guns, Joe. And when they threw me in a cell, Joe, I sang straight to hell, Joe. I sang straight to hell, Joe. Oh, Joe, when you got up to sing, it was a bullet in a Contra's gut. It was an arrow in the eye of a general. It was a pitchfork in a landlord's neck. It was a kick in the balls for the rich. It was everything good, Joe. It was everything good. And then us zombies and us rasters and us punks and workers win. You will be singing in our blood, Joe. You will be dancing like speed in our veins. You will be dancing like speed in our veins. Cheers. I'm from Tom Dizzy. Sir Disney. Just slap myself in the back of that. Yeah. Haven't been here for 15 years, but I hope it's okay. Anyway, I'm a boy younger called Fearless, and the last time I saw Fearless, you ever went to Star, and one of the big Stars where they've got these big massive fridges full of beer at the back, and you know, you could fit an elephant in the fridge, it's so big. The last time I met Fearless, he was actually in the fridge, right? I'm not joking. I'm fucking Fearless! Try me now, why don't you? And I promise you faithfully, you won't last too long, because I'm the one they're all audible when they're drinking their fucking coffee above in Sullivan's Cafe. I'm the one that spread myself out on the bench of a summer's day, sucking a flagon with me pot-belly hanging out, fucking and blinding anyone who'd be passing, because I'm fearless, fucking fearless. Last Friday I got steamed the running cock. I got popped on the angry from Titan from young Felicia. When I now popped out the fire block, I got a mad happy to run out in the road, and I'm screaming into the headlights, how I'm fearless, fucking fearless. I'm the laziest old bollocks that ever you met, but I'd ate your fucking eyeballs in the shot. I'm barred from every pub and every booking too, but I'd walk to Tipperary for a drink and a bet. I'd walk to Tipperary for a drink and a bet. Doubt me now, watch me go so, till I lift up onto the bar counter like a pure fucking tiger and kick the heads one by one off the beer tap and stick a pint glass into me brow and watch myself into the big bar mirror as I dance in the blood and the fountains of beer. As I dance in the blood and the fountains of beer. Yeah, Tom Kennedy, of course, famous for numerous reasons. One of them being that in the year of our Lord 2001, they won the Entente Florale. Now, they had won the Tidy Towns in 2000, and the Entente Florale is like the international Tidy Town. So, the town that I come from became the tidiest town in the entire universe when they won that. And my brother and his friend Sammy, were not part of the Tidy Towns Committee. And the Tidy Towns Committee was passing by them as they were going through Tom Kennedy in one of the open top fans, and everybody had their, you know, their kind of medals and all that stuff on them, you know. And they pointed at my brother and his buddies and they said, we did it to spite on an SME, right? It's not getting any good ideas at home, you know. And this is all on the wedding for the Entente Florale, dedicated to my brother and Sammy Tanner, who we sent back to you.
Told ye so! Told ye we could win it! Spite the fears of the likes of ye! With your baseball caps, and your baggy pants, your ghetto blasters, and your nigger music, your Mitsubishis, and your trainee whores hanging off ye! Rolling in monkey are the slaves aiding ye, manes and stinking like tinker's mares. But I say ye'd not too sure who bore ye, like your fathers and mothers before ye. Sure, who pissed you out, Twisty? Was it the milkman? Was it the coalman? Was it one of Fawcett's weeping clowns? This here's come a champion, little town, all down to good people like me. We patch every blossom with vines, flowers cover every stain. It's like paradise, except in ye, ye snakes, ye diggers, ye dirty, filthy fucking animals. Ye give us all a bad name.
Yeah, I only know those doctors are jealous of Billy, and he can do it, you know what I mean? That's what I have to do as well. So that's what I did against Billy, actually. They're all from, well, actually, we fucked them off, but a couple of those are from my last book. And I'm not going to take everybody's email, but I give everybody my email. And if you want the book, you can have a PDF for free and take it off or whatever, you know. So it's other kind of other things, so no problem. These are from, I'm going to read a few from the collection that's coming up. This first one is called, I will not talk, I will not sing, I'm not afraid of anything. The same hands, the same stones, is a rampart or a bridge. The answer is numerous. It's so nice having the streetlight in the bedroom. What is it? The hand hurls the stone hurls the street into the room. We were on Pier Street, there was a kind of brown twilight like halfway down a boot. A river disturbed, the whole class of 92 was there, the draper's son, the minister's son, the unemployed man's son, all of the sons and all of the daughters. We were marching, parts of a huge, hot, snaking crowd. Perhaps everyone who had ever been reared in the parish was there. We were 17 and naked from the waist up. We kept looking each other up and down in gleeful disbelief. Joyful shock of resurrection into our old, hopeful lives. We all punching the air and gleefully chanting the slogan of this massive march. The chant was, what the fuck is, what the fuck is, what the fuck is going on? It is easy to do. You get the young man so drunk he would sleep through an elephant invasion. Then you carry the mattress carrying him out the door and deposit the load out there on the footpath underneath the sheeting wet. Then hurry back beyond the doors and windows, take a comfortable seat, pour a glass and watch him drowning in the summer rain. Suggestion. Paint an enormous banner for display across your rooftop. A human lives here. My friend in Cork tells me he is also drowning. Drowning in a sea of particulars. My animal. My animal. My animal. My animal is a selfish, greedy, tiresome old nag, always in my fucking ear. Go on, have another one. Have one for the road, have one for the trees, have one for the revolution, have one for the queen. Snort this, swallow that, lick, suck, bite, fuck. Only after I have ridden my animal into the ground do I get to walk the earth on my own 2 feet. Pain, I will outlast you. I will outdo you in the end. Here's, this one is, I started writing poems about being on the train, you know, because I was on the train so fucking often. I was complaining to myself, I don't have any time to write because I'm on the blood train. So I just started writing some poems about what happened on the train, and it worked out quite well, actually. And then I ended up with a poem on the train, isn't that cool? Okay. Rosslare Diesel, two types of trains in Dublin, electric and diesel. Rosslare Diesel, northbound, Maybank Holiday, 2008. The man in black is asleep in his seat. Popped, stubbly,
greasy, mustachioed, and purple of nose and of cheek, where the veins have irreparably splayed. He stinks just a little bit, as if he were just a little bit dead. The greyish flakes on his shoulder and sleeve could be dandruff or it could be ash. The party of four, either way across, are dying as well. The women smile, saying nothing. The men are debating whether it's straight for the pub when they hop off the train in Dunleary, or phone up ahead first and get in an eight ball of coke. The coke will bring us up sweetly, says one, and the gap will knock us back down again, says the other. At Bray, the diesel drops to a halt, and man in black shudders awake. From his black knapsack, he produces a 2 litre of Hoggar, quarter full, takes a swig, smacks his lick, then offers it around. Everyone's grateful. All the yellow smiles. Then the talk of them all comes to Holland, the skunk and strong acid, the coffee shops, the sex museums, the magazines for those into shitting and pissing, the peep shows, the whores on parade. The party of four intend to lose a weekend there in June. The man in black lived in the dam for 9 years. He's even picked up a hint of the accent, a touch of the Dutch. I was there for 3 years before I phoned my parents to let them know where I was. He chuckled. Fuck it. I've been having a great laugh. Something is up with the toilets, and all of them, they are bursting. The man in black says when he leaves, the diesel and Connolly, he ain't waiting. Hell no. It's straight in the cab to the ward.
Okay, vocabulary lesson, Smithfield. I among other things, I've been an English teacher. And I worked for a long time in Smithfield, teaching kids from all over. One of them, Raoul, was from Romania, and he was a really nice guy. Not the slightest bit of interest in school, but he was a nice guy, and he used to have a pizza van in the evening. He had good English, but from working, not from school, you know. We were talking about aims. Raoul said he didn't know what aims were. I explained that your aims were where you wanted your life to go. The bit of bowling you laid out for yourself. The particular direction in which you wanted to head. He said, I don't have any aims. I have no aims. That's good English, I said. But you could have said you were aimless. Or better still, adding a wording and a decorative stroke, declare to the world that you're aiming at nothing. The thing about aiming at nothing, I then went on, mouth-farting on, crude, pedantic, nihilist I am, is that it's such a big and such a wide target that sooner or later, and I'm thinking, by the cut of your route now, it's going to be sooner, you're absolutely certain, sure, at some stage, my pity, my boot of a boy, my frozen in fear of tomorrow, to someday find yourself striking it.
This is the one called Dominic Street, arrested me. Dominic Street is a flat in Dublin in the city centre. And I was walking past it one day, and pretty miserable place really, but everyone was having a good time. There's a little patch of grass, you know. And, you know, everyone was out drinking cider and going around in their toys, and they're having a great time. And it just seemed to me like how people can turn such, you know, such a fucking dump really into a good place, you know what I mean? Dominic Street, arrested me. To make a beach where there is only worn out grass, you need a lot of cider going around. You need a cast of galloping 3 to 9 year olds. You need the male chest and the Chinese alphabet. You need the sun. You need the drone of various miniature engines. You need 2 lads leaning on the railing who can no longer speak and have lost the fear of drowning. Passing by in the haze, you need yourself, still wet with the belief that beyond the light splintering on broken glass and beneath the busted footpaths, there are seabirds, ocean, dolphins, sand.
No curses in that one, is there? I have to rewrite it.
Okay, and one good thing about being an English teacher as well is that you meet a lot of Spanish girls. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I was teaching a group of Spanish girls, and they were kind of elementary level. If anyone knows about that, it's like basically they happen to, right? They don't know, when they talk to you, you don't know whether they're talking what language. They talk kind of pidgin, you know? So I wrote a poem in the pidgin, and every word that's in this, they actually said, right? Of course, I rearranged it, but all the words and the pronunciation and all that kind of hard. This is called Spanish Elementaries, July 2007. They have came here by hair to this wee poolick of Ireland. By wine air. Some are hungry. Some sleeping stand cat. Mostly is they hokey. Edgar, most older, he is the musical of Alicante. And he played violin for the dead people in the cemetery. See, it's true. Why no? It's really true, really. See, see? Surfer communist Matthew Camaratus is Joachim and Jorge. Jorge 18, he is looking in for girls. It's hard, too hard. All these canaries and all of this island is burning. Alex Hayes and Lucia the Peacefist is no okay with seating. Marcia from Extremadura for wanting change class. Her had she bad head for too much Spanish. Pablo like walking the moon hands. And Mudina, they meet lookies like festival. Natalia, is from Spain. Her neck trouble is road to Portugal. She is living on beaches Granada. Is you coming? These my Spaniolos, and they asses me mush these difficult catches. Like, where is in Ireland the food? And when the sunny is coming? Why so? Why so too many Irish young persons have babies? And why why they throw eggs? Where have them good time for cheaply? Is safe now go Belfast? And T-shirt, are you married or singer? Do you talk lovers? And why is it all the days raining?
How much time is on there?
Sorry, no, you're fine.
Oh, got you.
We're making everybody's head here. Good. Okay, this poem about the Napalmists. I don't even bother saying how relevant it is. The Napalmists. Know what Napalm is?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The Napalmists. The Napalmists has no eyes. That's how he sees you. Riding so fucking high up air, you won't even hear him booming when his levers slit the silver belly of the bomb whale and a shoal of flashing silver mouths go raiding down. Fall down, fall down, fall down. And he has mouths to burn with, so many snapping mechanical mouths to burn with, to burn with, to burn with, to burn with. His tongue has mouths to burn with, his hair has mouths to burn with, his chin has mouth to burn with, his breasts are split by mouth, his belly has a thousand rows of mouth, his navel is a raw, enormous mouth, his spine is mouth, stacked upon mouth, his cock and his balls flaunt their mouths. The Napalmist, hell is his Vegas, hell is his carnival, hell is his baby, hell is his rosy bouquet, hell is his Christmas childhood, and he'll suck the fucking hell out of you with all of his shimmering mouths, with his neck mouths, and his wrist mouths, his knuckle mouths, his calf mouths, his ear mouths, his elbow mouths, and his finger mouths, and his palm mouths. But the mouths on the soles of his feet, the mouths at the tips of his toes are the worst. They'll give you a special kind of doom. They'll snatch and clamp and crush and chew and chomp and change the skin of all the children of your neighborhood. Chase them screaming from naked, from evaporated hearts and up the melting road with flames stuck to them like burning super glue. Fall down, fall down, fall down. The Napalmists. The Irish and all-Maori Napalmists, a Negroli in England, patented too, coming soon perhaps, or maybe late, to a colony near you. Yeah, somewhere between silence and screaming, there's poetry, sometimes. Doesn't go on here now. You mean it? Okay, 67. This is a poem called Love from Wandering. And I wrote this after an Israeli gunboat bombed a beach where people were having their kind of Sunday picnic.
and a child lost all of her family, all of her family, in the bomb that landed on the beach. She rushes screaming from the sparkling sea. The little girl, all gone. Her father on all fours, laying out the chicken, hummus, salad, olives, bread. Drooping belly tender to the broiling sand. Warmth. Her two brothers start to kick a ball into the sun. Laughter. Soon as she finishes chapter 12, her older sister will dip in. Waves. Her uncle snoozing underneath his hat and beard. Peace. Her mother with the overheated baby at her breast. Song. Peace. Hat. Beard. Chicken. Laughter. Uncle. Breath. Baby, hummus, mother, nail, warmth, bread, sister, son, ball, weight, brother, belly, father, picnic, fan, song, salad, love. All gone. The sea rushes, screaming from the little girl. Yeah. Anyone ever hear the poet Barry McSweeney? Anyway, he's cool, right? I wrote this kind of, and it's dedicated to him, and it's called I'm Not Going to the Funeral. I'm not going to the funeral, even though, following the orders of one general drunk, I found a white shirt and a dry clean suit to wear. I'm still not going to the funeral, where the sad and broken sots that are my blood are going to mourn a paralytic pisshead's death by getting paralytic pissed. Mourn pathetic life pathetically by getting lost. Waste themselves wasted, mourning the waste. Spend the afternoon and quenching truth with vinegar lies. Lies, fucking lies, while getting drunk. And make this wet-brained failure of a champion and a charmer. This wino of a legend and a leading man. Elvis, Dean, Muhammad, De Valera, Shane McBestie. In their drunken knock while getting drunk. When all my rotting chieftain ever done will soak up drink like a fucking sponge, and puke will flow in the ashtink jacks of the fagging pub, and half raw and blood-tinged pork and fat be bitten and guts in piggish lumps, and phlegm will flow and puke in the jacks and blood. There will be spit and sweat and puke in the jacks and coughed up lung and blood. And a woman will swear once more near her cracking face, again on what she should, would, could have done, while he was pouring his lies and her life was drunk, and she crawled in the valley of her wasted blood, black-eyed, burst-lipped, cross-nosed, spit-tongued, cursing the drunk, the fucking drunk, cursing herself for not standing up, for not letting go, for not being gone, all the time she could, would, should have gone, but now it's me. It's me who won't be going, though I found a white shirt and a dry clean suit to wear, as fiercely instructed by General Drunk while he was drunk. I am not fucking going, I will not fucking go, to watch my dying outs go on killing themselves, getting drunk at the funeral of a drunk. Yeah, just a couple more up. This one is called The Giants, and it's another train poem. Between Killarney and Shankill, a giant appears to me. A bit of a bear in him, a bit of a lion, a bit of a preacher in a black-rimmed hat, a bit of a sage and a bit of a chief and a bit of a whiskery deep in the woodman. Obviously, this giant is from very far away. Another place, another time, another dimension. Relative to us, this place that is far, far away in all possible and impossible ways might as well be called nowhere. Relative to the giant, I guess that's where we are. This giant, this old, wise, courageous, powerful, friendly, forwardly guardian of the giant, was telling a story to a sleepy child. I didn't get to see the child, so I won't try to describe him. I just knew that he was there, trust me on that point. The giant story was the story of my life. Everything that ever happened to me. All the people and all the things that have ever happened to me. Every last detail about every last thing that had ever happened to me. I won't go into it. I like to pretend I find my life story quite boring. On the few occasions when I have actually succeeded in finding my life story boring, I have felt a rare triumphant peace and a road to death. But that's another boring. I have met the giant before. This giant who knows all about me. He appears to me now and then, as I'm up to a sightly.
But say I caught him drifting in the folds of black smoke in the eye-watering dawn after an illegal rave on Shirkin Island in 1992. But that I saw him from 50 k's away, towering over the quilted flat fields of Holland while I was cycling from the campsite in North Bikerhug to the bull-packing operation in Lissa. I fear this giant. I fear his judgment. I fear the humiliation that is the lasting sting of his judgment. Anyway, when the giant appeared to me, he was at a point in the story where everything about my life seemed to be coming together into a coherent whole. All the contradictions of my life were on the point of being resolved. Everyone in my life had forgiven everyone else for what they had done and what they had failed to do to each other. All the bad people were dead. The good people in my life had been rewarded with comfort and plenty and self-realization. I had been recognized and fated for my contribution to the race, and I had accepted all the praise and celebration with such warmth and humility that I had won admiration for that too. Eavesdropping on the story of my life as the dark neared Bray, I was very smugly satisfied to learn that in the end I would be proved right about all the times I claimed rightness, and that those who I claimed had been in the wrong would be shown conclusively to having been so. The giant did not seem too perturbed that I was listening to his account of the story of my life. All he seemed to care about was getting the child off the seat. The child falls asleep when the giant finishes reading my life story. My life story finishes when the child falls asleep.
Yeah, I moved to this place called Great Guns, right? And there's no, absolutely no greater contrast from where I'm from, really. I grew up in Clon, which has like 2,500 people and 40 pubs, and Greystone has about 25,000 people and 2 pubs, right? And when I looked at Greystone first, I was, you know, I'm used to living in places where there's tension, you know what I mean, and people might jump out from behind your ass at you at any stage, you know? So I was walking around and I hated Greystone because there was so tense and there was nothing to be tense about. But eventually I just got really, it's like an unbanning room in Greystone, it's unbelievable, you know, I recommend it, yeah. The lights, and this is about the lights in Greystone. The lights. Between Greystones and Charlesland, I walk in dusk, surrounded by lights. The tall, sheer flooding of the roadland, from exit to exit, from roundabout to roundabout, from the Calvinistic village age to the wireless networks in the growing settlement. Look up! Awake! These blazing neon sentries blare into my face. Be queer! Stay on! Soundlessly screaming, signalling via nothing, absolutely brittle, absolutely rigid, absolutely tightless and without care. Insensate, motionless, uninvolved, equidistant globes of frigid light, identically cold and identically bright, beams so finely honed they lop your shadow off. Light of the swamps and the shallows of light, half-born lights that only flitter at the open gateways of my eyes, unfeeling lights, incurious lights, not seeking nor seeing my light, not wanting to rush in spinning with the streamers and the fireworks to the Mardi Gras of wheeling galaxies on my inside. Plague lights, self-encircled in their own bone light. Light powdering themselves with decked limelight, lights that flash and spin with tread like diamond drill bits in a fox's eye. Things that are not things yet are sprouting in the formless dark, thriving beyond the ken of roadlights, beyond even the full moon's knowledge. Things will soon leap eyeless from the curtained verges, things will flame into shape from the cornfields of the night. At the incurving tip of their 40-foot roots, glowing spectres of the headless, of their portioned limbs, memoirs of the hanging trees of Ireland. The silent ringing onto the horizon of a single repeated letter from a one-letter alphabet, font Ozymandian, caps lock, tall, comfortless, austere, translation, to the end, to the end, to the end, to the end. Gratitude and greetings to the men of many winds who put up the roadlights, who gave them their space and their time, who gave the lights their measurements so that I might march fearlessly now into the local gloom, protected by the gleaming ciphers of the road signs that I take so much trouble not to understand, admiring the colour scheme of roundabouts, the layout of bouquets, the schemata of grass, the ugliness of absent weeds. Think how lift-offing it will be to spot the psilocybin fungi fountain through the new-laid clay, watch him soar above the half-lit trimmings of the edge. Beyond these, to my far left, lower down an even whiter bulb dozen to a bed. These functional ornaments exist to illuminate the clean swept tarmacadden car parks of several enormous wedge-shaped sea-grabbing apartment blocks. The car heads that start as firefly pricks then quickly buzz and shrivel up and disappear somewhere deep inside me. Green, red and amber, click, blip, whir, click, blip, whir, all night and all night and all day. Regardless, the traffic lights carry on their caper. The lights from the golf club, piercing the night from atop a black hill, lights of the 13th hole, disco lights that soak the brain in 60s sugared sentiment, chandeliers that sprinkle light like hundreds and thousands across the shiny heads of businessmen, bubble light fountaining out of the uncorked bottles of champagne, the assured light of inshore teeth sparkling in the pocket mirrors of the lady section. Turning into the estate, I call my only heaven, I call this my paradise, to be lit by vastly more and vastly different lights. Beautiful red and white and yellow tongues of firelight, flames that flutter winsomely like the flickering wings of fireflies, draw my enlivened soul and eyes across the deep pitch on my right to the bonfire where the teenagers from the neighbouring council houses that our residence committee want to wall out of sight, mix their drinks and bonds and shifts, and make their own tomorrows up. From all the downstairs living rooms, light jumps up and down rapidly, screaming filth and lies and gibberish, like the same irate madman imprisoned on the other side of every screen. The stars up above me always, unconcerned whether I look or not. Truthfully, I don't care much for them either. I too would be just as happy if they weren't there. Each tremendously shimmering star, ceaselessly trembling with 10 billion Niagaras of nuclear fire, and could drown the eyes of everything that ever lived in one drop of cascading light. But the stars are nothing to the vaulting darkness I adore. The darkness absorbs the drifting passive shoals of stars, and digests them, hardly noticing. The stars are only plankton in the belly of the night wind. Tiny little pricks of stars, impossible, unreachable stars. We will never hold them. They will never let us near enough to grab, and so they don't exist, except perhaps as decorations. Christmas was the season that flashed, a tacky tale of imitation frankincense and gold. The balconies were pink and could be read from far away. The bare branches of the rowan tree saplings electrified in blue. Pretty for a night or two, I thought of taking photographs, but then Christmas grow old so quick in its gold. It dies in its own waste, and we flush it down to the sewers of memory and forget it all 5 seconds later. The lights. These are the lights of my life. I can see all of them. I can show all of them to you. None of them can see me. None of them can show me you.
Okay. I'll read one more and then go on a short one. Thanks for listening to me. Thanks to Mr. Paul for inviting me down. And thanks very much for coming with me. This is Dying for Ireland. I am already well past grieving myself by the time I finally get to this morning, but cringe at the thoughts of my father at the front door explaining my mother's Antigonian wailing, 6 weeks without sleep, 3 without solace, a classic lack of attention to basic self-caring tasks like washing and shaving, and the latest phase, diabolic, the battle are enough for me to be pleased at the prospect of draining away on the bed, with bloody muscles twitching, my fingers and eyes deliriously trembling. In true Irish martyr fashion, I forgot to give a warning. Thanks.